Well, it's great to have you back with us this morning. We bring in the professor, Ron Wotus, our third base coach. Whoa, how does the ballpark look this morning?
It's looking good. It hasn't come to life yet. One thing that I noticed this morning, there was no rutabaga and kale. I don't know what happened to the vegetables. Maybe the kale is gone because Hunter Pence is no longer with us. But there's a lot of bread, hot dog buns, hamburg buns, and they're loaded up on them. So grounds crew's working. I got to say hello to the great Jim Lynch. You know, Marty, these TV people, they work as hard as anybody in the game. You know, Jim Lynch's been doing this over 50 years, and his staff, cameramen, you know, they walk the park. I know on the road, I've gone to the park with them at noon a lot, you know, on the road for a 7 o'clock game, and they're the ones I ran into this morning coming into the ballpark.
Yeah, Jim Lynch is one of the best in baseball. Well, when I did Giants Vision, believe it or not, I was the stat guy for Giants Vision. I would put up the hero notes on the scoreboard. For about 35, yeah, this is in the 1987, 1988. I'd come to the park wearing my suit, coming right from court, and I would put the hero notes up on the board. I'd program them and work with Jim Lynch and John Ward and Seth Magalaner and Kevin Skillings and all these people. Well, I've known these people since the mid-'80s, and they're fabulous. They do such a good job.
Yeah, they really do. And the camera guys, you know, I see one of the great Kuipers down there, Jeff Kuiper. They're looking at the microphones and things. I mean, but they, you know, they do it right. They don't leave no stone unturned, and they do a great job. So I didn't know you were doing that back in the day.
Yeah, I came from court. I'd be doing the case. I'd say to the judge, well, judge, I've got to leave now. I got to go to Candlestick.
Nice.
That's the way it was back then. Boy, funny. Hey, yesterday, of course, the news, everyone's waiting to hear, and I don't know if you know anything about it, but what happened yesterday with Crawford and Longoria? Well, what was the deal there?
Well, you know, that was one of the wackiest ninth innings I've seen in a long time, and, you know, Raj gets a lot of ground balls, and, you know, they were hitting the seams, and we made a couple miscues, but that ball was right between Craw and Longo, and Craw's playing Deadpool, and you know how important that out was. I mean, shoot, the game was on the line, and, you know, they're in different positions going for it. It's not your normal straightaway positions where you communicate, and I think both guys, you know, felt like they needed to make the play, and they just ran into each other because they're in such different positions that they're normally used to. And, you know, what you don't want to do is back off and look at each other. So it was a difficult play, and they banged into each other. And obviously Longo had to be removed. So we're keeping our fingers crossed that he's going to be okay. But there is a good probability that he will hit the IL because of that collision. And I haven't spoken to Dave Greschner and his great staff this morning to get any more details than that, but I'm sure we'll all be hearing the details here shortly.
Wow. Yeah, that was something else. And, boy, but Rogers, he gets those ground balls. Well, just when you think it's going to come apart, he gets a strikeout or a ground ball. Amazing.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, it was a tough matchup for him in the ninth inning, and Andrew Bailey went out and talked to him about Hayward. You know, Hayward's a low ball hitter, and Rog, you know, he throws that sinker down underhand. And so they wanted to make sure that they attacked him the right way, and they did, and they got him out, and it got us the game. Thank goodness we held on to win that game, because that would have been a tough pill to swallow if we lost it.
You know, it's funny for me. There's a couple of plays in a season. I think when you look back on a successful season, and I'll tell you this, the catch that Talkman made in L.A. That turned that game around, and also the home run that Vossler hit in Arizona. Now, these are two guys that, you know, are just kind of fringe players on the team. Talkman will take a million pitches, and Vossler's got some good power. But, well, when you look back on this season, you may look back on those two plays, one the home run, the other one the catch.
Yeah, no, you're right. You know, moments in time always do flash into your head, turning points or particular plays that save games. And you know, Marty, it's always going to go down to a game or two, just like it did last year, you know, and you run through your head, you know, if we only did this or if we only won this game. So I think you mentioned it on this show. There's been a little bit of magic here, and Farhan and Scott have done a nice job of giving us depth with the players. You know, everybody's getting hurt today in baseball, and the guys we're calling up that are stepping in, like you mentioned, a Vossler, are getting the job done, and you need that in today's game. You need that deep roster. You're going to use everybody throughout the year. Talkman was a great addition for us. I know he's not swinging it the way he'd like to right at this point, but he's a major league player, and he'll get on track at some point, and it gives us so much more depth. And so you're right about the performance that these guys are putting up, and that's what you need when you win. You know, it's just not one or two guys carrying you. You need contributions from everybody, and we're getting that.
We're starting to see a few more steals. And I know baseball would love to see a little more of the running game going in. Why are we seeing more steals all of a sudden? Talkman took off the other day to steal second. I'm not sure it was a great move when he did it, but we are seeing more running.
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, the league wants a little more excitement in the game, and I don't think that's definitely not the reason that teams are doing it. I think that, you know, teams that have speed and have athletes see an advantage. I think pitchers today are not as adept in holding runners. You know, they all throw hard. They're all looking for the strikeout. You don't have as many finesse guys. And a lot of times when you're throwing with high velocity, you know, you're rearing back and you're not trying to be quick to the plate. And I think that's where it stems from, is the type of pitchers that are throwing today. You know, these guys, the Cubs, they got a couple throwback pitchers here, right? And Davis and the guy going today,
Hendricks.
You know, yeah, baby Maddox. You know, they hit the corners. They got good movement on their ball. They change speeds. But the majority of the guys in the league today are different types of pitchers, and I think that has something to do with it. And any good manager, if you have speed on your team and you have an advantage, and the pitcher is going to be slow to the plate, and you know you have it calculated out. I remember when I first came up here to the big leagues, when Roger Craig was the manager, I managed in San Jose, and they let me come to the big leagues in September and travel with the team. And, you know, Roger was one of the first ones with the stopwatch, and I'd sit there with Flea, and, you know, you got the catcher's pop time the second, you have the pitcher's delivery time, and now with the analytics, you have the sprint speeds. Everything's down to a millisecond. So you can actually gauge it a lot better today on if this guy gets his normal jump. Is he going to be safe or is he going to be out? So I think that enters into it as well.
Well, great point. Great point, because the percentage of successful steals, they're up. There's no question. Well, that's a great point. There's more information, not just the pop time and everything else. Now you look at the runner, you can really nail that down. That's a very good point. The other thing is the bunt and slash, and DeSclafani tried it the other night. DeSclafani can handle the bat a little bit. I like that play. I like it.
Yeah, well, you know, he's lived a little bit. He's been in the league. He's been at the plate for a while. He's been in the National League. You know, you get a lot of pitchers that have been in the American League, and they don't have that experience, and it's not easy. You know, they're not getting game speed reps very often. They're hitting, you know, game speed once every 5 days, and you get put in these situations, you know, you want to sacrifice bunt, but if they run a wheel play, you know, Rizzo's very aggressive. He comes down your throat there at first base. He'll even go all the way to the third base side to make a play. And when a guy's doing that, there's nowhere to bunt the ball. So you have to be able to slash, you know, pull the bat back and try to put the ball in play because there's so many holes on the field. And it is a good play. And even if you don't get a hit on it, you might keep the defense honest, because if they run a wheel play and everybody's down your throat, there's nowhere to bunt the ball. So you're just bunting into the out and maybe into a double play. So it's nice. You know, the pitchers are such a big part of the National League game, and we all know it's probably going to go away next year, but it wins and loses you games. Getting the bunt down, being able to slash, keep the defense honest, getting a key hit like some of our guys have done, Webb and Tony D. So it's an important part of the game.
Yeah, and Gausman got the bunt down yesterday. He got jammed, and more in self-defense, but he got a big bunt down, and then Wade got the hit behind him.
Yeah, and that was a great bunt. That was a fastball in. You know, and Gauzy is our leading hitter on the pitching staff. I think he's got four hits, and American League guy. And he's done a great job getting the bunts down. And that was not an easy bunt, a fastball in to a left-hander, and you got to push it over to third base. That's easier to bunt to first, but you can't because Rizzo's standing there. And that was a great manipulation of the bat to get that bunt down. And, you know, those things, we won by one run. And then we got a hit and got a run there. So, you know, those are the points that that are real valuable in the game, especially when you're playing close games. You got to execute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great point. We're seeing more of it, and I like it. It gets you more involved in the game. Hey, you got a lot of TV time the other day. There was a ground ball, foul ball, obviously, and you made the pickup. It looked like, heck, you looked like someone from 1860. They didn't have gloves yet. You were so smooth with it. And then you pivoted and threw into the stands. Come on, what happened?
Well, I was feeling good that day. You know, I stretched before the game. The legs feel good. The arm felt, well, the arm didn't feel good. But, no, the ball was right at me. And I said, what the heck? You know, I just don't want to let it go by. You feel silly when you let the ball go by you. Unless it's hit extremely hard, then I think it's the prudent thing. You know, I need a little work on the throwing to get it over these nets. I wish the nets were about 10 feet lower. I'd be able to toss them to people, but it's not easy getting that ball over the net. I feel like a pole vaulter that just can't get the ball or get your body over that pole. But I'll tell you, the Cubs are doing something. I don't know if you noticed their base coaches, Harris at third base.
Is it Willie Harris?
I forget
who it is.
Willie Harris, yeah, not Lenny Harris. Anyways, they got a little bet going. For every ball they catch, they get $1,000. They have a competition between the first base coach and the third base coach. And I guess the way it goes, and if they attempt to catch one, they miss it, they get a minus $1,000. And then the winning coach gets to donate that money to charity. And I guess the players are getting involved. And they got a lot of gamblers and bettors over there with the game within the game. And they're going to furnish the money. And then the coach can send that money to his favorite charity. So that's kind of a nice deal that they're doing over there with the Cubs.
Well, you'd have to go against Anton Richardson, who's an outfielder. How does that sound?
Well, I like the sound of that. He is an outfielder. I think I'd have the advantage there. So maybe we'll have to chat about that.
I like it. Well, I'll tell you one. It's so funny you brought that up because yesterday – there was a foul ball down third base, and it went sort of towards the dugout. Harris went after the ball like a kid in the stands. Did you see that, to get a ball?
Yes, no. Yeah, no, I did see it. You know, I heard about this thing, and, of course, I always watch when the foul balls go by because when a guy boots one or he does an attempt for one, you know, you throw your hands up like, what are you doing? Come on, make a play. There's been a lot of entertainment with that over the years. The third base coach, I remember with the White Sox, he used to go for balls. And I remember him diving for a ball one time. And one time he went and he caught the ball and he took it and he flipped it, you know, like a backhand flip to the shortstop if he was second baseman, into the stands all in one motion. And, of course, he was on the TV after the game talking about his great feed and the great play. And so it's all in fun.
Yeah, it's good. We'll have to watch Harris today, and you. We'll have to see. Maybe you'll get something going here. That would be interesting. Hey, Brandon Crawford. Well, he is a game or two or one away from becoming the all-time franchise leader in games played at shortstop. Now, I'm not talking about San Francisco. I'm talking about the New York Giants as well. And you're talking about 140 years of baseball. He's going to tie a guy or go ahead of Travis Jackson, Will. Hall of Famer from 1982. He was the captain of the Giants 1922-36. Five-time National League pennant winner, one World Series. His number's not retired, number five or six. He had a great arm, quick release. His nickname was Stonewall because he had such great range, nothing got past Stonewall Jackson. He eventually was a coach in the New York Giant organization as Horace Stoneham took care of everybody. And then Leo Durocher came in 1948 and said, nah, I've seen enough of him, and that was the end of him with the Giants. But this is a guy with a great throwing arm, a quick release. He was one of the great shortstops of the National League. And not many people know anything about him, but Craw's going to go past this Travis Jackson. How about that?
Well, I really like that nickname, Stonewall. And this is just a tremendous accomplishment, in my opinion. I remember when Omar Vizquel passed Luis Aparicio for the most, was it games at shortstop? I think it was over 3,000. I don't know what the number was, but I remember that very vividly. It was such a big deal. And rightfully so. You know, I've always thought the gauge of a great player is his longevity. Because, you know, anybody can come to the big leagues and have, you know, a good month or a good year. But you always say, you know, the great ones, you look at the back of the baseball card. And they're consistent. And they may have a down year. But if they play 14 years, you know what you're getting. And there's a longevity. And it's not easy to do at this level. I remember Ovar stood up one day in September when he was with the club. And this is coming from a guy that knows what he's talking about, obviously, with you know, staying in the major leagues. But he told all the young players the hardest thing to do in this game is to keep your job because there's, you know, 50 new players or more than that drafted every year, and they're all coming for your job. So, and I think what Craw is doing is even more impressive, obviously, than Stonewall, because back then, if you could just pick the ball, right, the Mark Belangers, the guy, the shortstops were in there for defense. But in today's game, if you don't produce with the bat, they don't run you out there. They want offense from that position. So I'm so proud of him and happy for him that he's been able to stay healthy. And that is a tremendous accomplishment for me. And I just can't wait for that day to come to congratulate him.
Well, I'm glad. Well, it's going to come the next day or two, depending on how many numbers you look at in Baseball Reference. But he's going to either go ahead of him today or tie him today. But Stonewall's number was 5 or 6, and, you know, numbers started coming in the early 30s. And so he never had his number retired. You look at the numbers that are up there. He's not up there, but he is a Hall of Famer. His best hit, he said, well, you'll love this, Game 4 in the 1933 World Series. It's the 11th inning, a drag bunt single, and he ends up scoring the winning run to win the game in the World Series. He said that was his favorite hit of all time.
Wow. You know, that's another great story, Marty. And the fact that, you know, we think about the home run and you know, you got to hit the ball out of the ballpark. But that's what wins championships sometimes. It's a bunt. And we've seen it. We've seen it through our World Series runs, the execution of certain plays and things that happen. And they get overlooked because they're not as sexy as, you know, the big hit or the homer. But those things make a difference, and it's interesting to hear a man say that was his favorite hit of all time.
Yeah, he first year in the minor league, 72 errors. How about that?
Wow. Wow, 72.
It's like Derek Jeter.
Jeter. Right? Yeah, Jeter, what'd Jeter have, 42 or
56,
something like that?
Maybe, 56, something like
that. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Wow,
so that's
interesting.
Yeah, that's the Travis Jackson story. Well, I was thinking about you this week. You know, of course, road trip is coming up. You go to Washington, down to Arlington, and, you know, you're going to be moving around a little bit. Do you have a favorite spot? You know, what do you do on the road? Do you go to things? Do you go to museums? Do you go out on the road? Because Washington's a place to see so much.
Yeah, no, I mean, over 24 years, I've pretty much done it all. I'm not a big sightseer, but like you said, you know, Washington's great. You know, there's certain cities to see the sights. I mean, I've gone out to Arlington Cemetery, and I've gone to all the monuments, and, you know, I've done a lot in Washington, no question about it. But pretty much I just walk these days and try to find a nice place to eat. You know, I love walking. I know Boach has the book, right?
Yeah,
Boach has
right,
the walking
right.
book. But I could put one out there, too, because that's where I spend most of my time. And whether you walk in Central Park or, you know, Manhattan or walking, you know, somewhere to get something to eat, going to a coffee shop. I mean, that's basically what we do. And you said Washington's a great city. There's some great restaurants down there by the White House. You got Old Ebbets Grill. I don't know if you've ever been there. And they have the Hamilton Hotel, which is a nice hotel with a nice two bars. It has two bars where you can get a good appetizer. So, you know, I get around a little bit. It depends on the city. You enjoy that. That's your time to relax.
You have a favorite?
Well, you know, I think the favorites obviously going to D.C., New York, you know, Philly and Chicago. I mean, it's hard to beat Gibson's in Chicago for dinner. Great, great restaurant. Go there almost every chance I get. And also in New York, I like the old steakhouse. I mean, there's so many good ones. But I go over there to Sparks, where Paul Castellano got gunned down in the 80s
okay.
by four gunmen. It's an old steakhouse, and I like the feel of the place. And I go over there every chance I get.
Now make sure you sit with your back to the wall. Right?
Yeah, good point. Good point.
Yeah. No, absolutely. That was good. Hey, let's bring Bill in. Bill, good morning. I'm sure you got a question or two for Woe here.
Yeah, I got a quick one for you, Ron. It happened yesterday in the fifth inning. Longoria gets the walk. Crawford hits the double, but it hits the net, then hits the pillar, and then bounces around. Longoria is not the fastest on the team. When did you decide to send him? He's coming from first base. And, boy, you got some great eyes if you could see it hit that pillar. Tell me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you're right, Bill. Good morning to you. Well, you know, it's such a short a corner down there. It's only 309 down the right field line. And typically, if you don't have a burner on the base, to your point, it's hard to score them. So, you know, I got way down the line towards home. It gives you more time to make a decision. And, you know, I didn't expect to score him when the ball was hit. But then when it hit, it bounced away from him. You know, I thought we had a chance. And I just stayed down the line and kept waiting and kept waiting. And I just thought we had a shot. The relay guy, Sogard, he doesn't have a great arm. You know, I was a little nervous on that send, Bill. I mean, good looking at that. Because if he gets thrown out with nobody out, it's a terrible play on my part. But Longo, once he gets moving, he is moving pretty good, and he scored fairly easily. So, but it is scary trying to send those guys with nobody out. No question about it.
Well, great hit by Craw too, coming through. How about that? Seems like I don't know what they did to him. Well, I really don't. But they did something where this guy covers the whole field now.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about Craw and his hitting or fielding.
Well, the fielding we know, but the hitting, you pitch him away, he just takes it away with power.
Yeah. You know, I talked to him about it the other day. He's made some great adjustments with his hands. His hands used to be tighter into him. And if you think of him, if you look at video when he first came to the big leagues, his swing is really a lot different now than it was then, and he's really cleaned it up. And this year, you know, the hitting coaches and him, they worked hard in cleaning up his bat path. He moved his hands away from him. He's a little more cleaner, and it's allowing him to do more at the plate. And then you add on the experience and the knowledge that he has, and there you go. He's having another solid year.
Well, you know, one other thing I wanted to mention this morning. I'm doing professor. I'm going to school with you this morning. But we have a book review coming up of a manager of the Cubs in the early 1900s, Frank Seeley. He's a Hall of Famer. Managed the Boston Bean Eaters and also the Chicago Cubs. But the point to you, Woe, is managing at the early part of the century, the way it evolved, the manager would make suggestions to the players. And the manager wouldn't run the game from the bench. The captain on the field would run the game. And this guy loved to hit behind the runners and bunt and hit and run and double steal. He was a gentleman in a game of brawlers. But can you imagine managing in a situation like that?
No, not really. Not in today's game. I mean, everything in today's game is pretty much dictated the best that you can and scripted out. It really is a different game when it comes to that. Of course, there's no more hit and runs. We saw Joe Maddon hit and run the other day. But, you know, I mean, a lot of times, obviously, in a game, when you have veteran players, there are situations when they go to the plate and it may call for a bunt or it may not call for a bunt. You know, the player sometimes will make his own judgment. Even though the manager will give him a bunt, he'll decide, I'm swinging away. And usually, you know, if it's a veteran guy, you know, it works out. You let them do their thing. And so that's pretty much the extent of it. But, no, the game's a lot different today. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, Bill, did you play with guys who, you know, the number two hitter would touch his hat and there would be the hit and run and they would be called by the player on the field?
Not much on that. I knew base runners sometimes did that to the hitter when they were stealing, so the hitter knew that the guy on base was going to steal. That was about the only thing I remember doing that. Hit and runs usually are all by third base coach. Very seldom you saw players doing it, but it was more the communication from the runner ready to steal rather than hit and run.
Well, this Frank Seeley managed the Boston Bean Eaters. How about that, Will?
That's a great name as well. But, you know, back to the hit and run, and, you know, like I said, I've been doing this a long time, but there's been a few guys. Tony Gwynn used to call his own hit and run, but they're few and far between, to Bill's point. And you know who likes to do it? It was Flores, our guy. He used to call his own hit and run with the runner as well. And but the hit and run is pretty much extinct from the game. The analytical side did not see the value in the hit and run. So, yeah, just wanted to follow up on that I have seen it done, but it's just not very common at all.
Boy, good stuff. Good stuff on a Sunday morning. I always like learning about some of these things, Travis Jackson, Frank Seeley, and stuff like that. And the game is still the game. What can I tell you? You know, it's still hit and run once in a while, but the double steal and the slash and bunt and all that goes back 100 years, and it's just a question of executing it. Well, I wanted to mention River Islands a second before we go. I was thinking about all the demographics of River Islands and what we talk about. And there's something for me there. There's something for you there. There's something for Bill there. There's something for younger people as well in the business world and working at home. River Islands has something for everybody. It hit me this morning.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. It's, you know, it's you head to the islands is their slogan there. We're not talking about Alameda Island, which is nothing wrong with. It's a great island. That's where my wife, my wife's mom is from. But the point is, you're out there in the country, to your point, and you have a great selection of homes. You're on the river. You have the waterways. Just everything's in walking distance. A great place to raise kids. You know, you're just a hop, skip, and a jump from Livermore if you want to go, you know, to Wente Vineyard, or you want to go to a little bigger city. But River Islands has it all there. They grow wine, the Deloso Farms. You know, they have that great fall festival at their farm there. There's so many options and things to do, as you're saying, for the family. I think that makes it extremely appealing. You're exactly right, Marty.
Bill, we got to get you out to River Islands.
Yeah, I got to get out there. Maybe I can go out there fishing with Ron.
Yeah, let's do it this winter. We'll head out there and we'll fish for some food at the restaurant.
All right. Well, have a great day today, and we're going to watch you on the foul balls here. And let us know if the contest starts. It's almost like a Seinfeld episode. This will be pretty good. But that little Willie Harris, well, I'm telling you, he almost went in your dugout to get the ball.
Well, you know, I think I'm going to get a little flan in me. If you see me out there in cleats, you know I'm trying to catch balls, okay?
Okay, all right.
Hey, Ron, have a good conversation with Adam Hamari at third base, okay? Because he was looking at you yesterday.
Yeah, I have to introduce myself. He had a few choice words for me yesterday. I'll smooth it over today, Bill.
There you
Thanks
go.
For reminding me.
All right. Well, have a great day. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Bye-bye.
Now, that's terrific. Bill, there's nothing better than Sunday morning with Will. You know that?
Oh, he's fantastic. This the conversation you guys have. You just sit back and listen to two guys just chatting, and it was great. He's always good.
Good stuff.
That's why
good
he's
stuff.
Professor.
Who do you have coming up next?
Oh, I got a good one next, Marty. Bill Madlock's going to join me, the Mad Dog. Of course, he played with the Cubs and the Giants before he went to Pittsburgh to win his World Series. Four-time National League batting champ. So
wow.
We're going to talk hitting, and it's going to be a good conversation with the Mad Dog.
Oh, that'd be fun. Okay, more coming up. KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.